and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Well, coming up, we're going to hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night, and we'll talk about some of the big issues in state politics, and we'll look back at the president's first year in office and his accomplishments and non-accomplishments. We'll talk about those for the first few minutes here on the show. Later on, we're going to talk about the government shutdown. And we'll open up the phone lines, too, later on in the show and take your phone calls. First Florida This Week from this past Friday night, featuring a panel that includes a Democrat, a Republican, and a couple of journalists. This is a show that airs on WEDU-TV on Friday nights. Coming up next, we'll take a look at how well President Trump did keeping his promises in his first year in office with the Washington editor of PolitiFact. The tension between the state legislature and local governments is still roiling in Tallahassee. Some Florida mayors are targeted for running so-called sanctuary cities, and there's an effort to take away the independence of two of USF's campuses. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
WEDU Studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Loray.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Angie Holland is the editor of PolitiFact. Barry Edwards is a political consultant and a commentator and a Democrat. William Merlin is an attorney and a Republican. And John Romano is a columnist for the Tampa Bay Times. Thanks for coming. Good to have you here. I like your tie, Barry.
Thank you.
All right. Well, President Trump is celebrating the one-year anniversary of his inauguration. PolitiFact, the Pulitzer Prize-winning fact-check organization founded by the Tampa Bay Times, has been tracking 101 major promises made by the president. PolitiFact has rated 9 Trump pledges promises kept, with another 6 promises rated compromise. That means Trump has achieved complete or partial success on 15% of the promises during his first year in office. Another big chunk of Trump's promises, 47, or about 46%, have been rated in the works, which means he's taken some action to keep them, but it's too soon to tell the final outcome. PolitiFact has rated 7 promises as broken and another 32 as stalled, meaning no significant action has been taken. That means close to 40% of Trump's promises have run into obstacles during his first year. Trump has kept his promises, including freezing regulations, pulling the United States out of a major climate agreement, nominating a conservative Supreme Court justice, and keeping the Guantanamo Bay prison open. His broken promises include declaring China a currency manipulator, and his promise to release his tax returns has not been kept.
So, Angie, he's doing about 15%. He's having success with about 15%. Any idea how that compares to President Obama in his first year in office?
I think it's hard to compare the two. Obama had more pieces of major legislation passed. But I do think that they are similar in that where they could act on their own as president using executive power, they made a lot of progress. Where they had to rely on Congress to help them out, sometimes it's not so good. And Congress, I think, it's hard to believe this, but it's even less productive now than it was under Obama. Just the gridlock is terrible. So the one major piece of legislation that Trump can point to was the tax cuts. Mm-hmm. Obama had a couple of more pieces of legislation, meaningful pieces that he could point to.
The president has promised to repeal and replace Obamacare. How did you rate that?
That is stalled. The Congress can't agree on repealing it. It seems like the law is really entrenched now. Although President Trump was able to get the penalty for not having insurance put down to zero. So Obamacare is still here, but the Trump administration and Republicans in Congress are still putting up opposition to the law.
Building the wall, he wanted to build the wall, make Mexico pay for it. Not much progress there.
That's an interesting one. We were rating it in the works. It's kind of mixed. There are prototypes of a wall built that you can look at. He's having problems getting funding from Congress. It seems extremely unlikely that Mexico will ever pay for it, although he still talks about having Mexico pay for it.
A lot of the president's promises when he was on the campaign trail said that he made the promise that he would do it quickly, that he would accomplish a lot of this stuff quickly. Is that kind of boastfulness? Is that typical of any president who's running for office, that they say when they come into office they're going to get these things done really fast?
I think so. And they can get things done really fast if it's within their executive authority. Trump has issued a lot of executive orders. Working with Congress, they were able to repeal a lot of the regulations that President Obama tried to enact at the end of his term. But it is difficult to move quickly, and most especially, again, if there is if any change of law is required. And I should also add, Trump has ran into problems with the courts. He's gotten a lot done on a more restrictive immigration policy, but he has not been able to enact these wide-ranging travel bans because the courts have said this isn't legal or it wasn't done in a legal way.
Barry, how would you rate the president's first year in office?
An F.
Why?
Well, first of all, he's the most mendacious president in U.S. history. He's lied more, he's told more lies than all the other presidents combined. And you look at all these fact checkers, whether it's the great PolitiFact or the ones for Washington.
We haven't fact checked all the presidents in history.
But you look at all the fact checking they do, they find that he lies all the time. They're always finding that he's misleading or half-truth or pants on fire or whatever they, and the Washington Post with their Pinocchios and all these other fact checkers. And I was talking to my brother, presidential scholar. I mean, it's pretty universal in the presidential scholars that he's the most lie. But he's also been ineffective because, as a manager, he's impulsive, reactive. As a decider, he doesn't like to take information. General Kelly's tried to get him more flow of information, but he doesn't seem to be interested in taking it in and going to briefings.
Barry, as a person who didn't support Donald Trump, is that a good thing because he's not able to get his program through?
Yes, but it's not good because he's not, as far as managing the bureaucracy, he's not filling spots. We have the most spots of these undersecretaries ever unfilled after year. And the Congress, remember, the Congress is a Republican Congress, a Republican Senate. They confirm all his appointees. He's only had a couple that haven't been confirmed. He's not nominating anybody, and he says he doesn't want to fill them and lower the bureaucracy. You can't manage a 3 million, 4 million man bureaucracy without managers at the top. And his only success has been, like Angie said, when he's had administrative through executive order, we can do through fiat and do deregulation.
Well, Chip, one thing that the president did do was get this tax package passed, and he's really taking a victory lap now. He's going around the country touting the tax cuts and saying that you're seeing companies like Apple and other companies giving bonuses to workers, and therefore it's a good thing.
And a lot of people are sending their paychecks. They're having less money taken out by the government, which is another reason why Republicans believe in having fewer government employees, let people work in the private sector rather than having to have greater taxes, which are reaching into your pocket and taking the money out. So it's a philosophical difference in the way the two parties look at each other. Republicans look at a smaller government with less taxes and let people take care of themselves how they would like to versus relying upon others and tax them to take care of you.
Do you think that the effects of the tax cuts, I mean, the president is saying we're seeing the effects of the tax cuts right away.
Well, you are seeing them right away because they affect major corporations that have overseas investments. They're able to bring the money back without having to worry about paying outrageous taxes before. The earnings are up directly as a result of that. The stock market is doing great. I mean, everything is rolling just as predicted. And if you believe that there is fake news out there, the president is, and his supporters are arguing that the good part of this tax bill, middle Americans bringing home more money every single week from their paycheck, isn't being told.
Mm-hmm. All right, John, so what about that? I mean, the president's had a hard time getting a lot of stuff passed, a lot of things promised passed. But in this case, in the tax cuts, his supporters are pretty happy with it.
Well, I think both of these gentlemen are right. I think on style points, Barry's absolutely right. The guy has been an absolute train wreck. And the United States has suffered in the eyes of the rest of the world because of that. But it's also true that the tax cuts have seemed to have spurred the economy somewhat. Now, you could argue how much of that were policies that were put in place by the Obama administration, which you have every single, you know, from one administration to another, Obama blaming Bush for the problems, Trump taking credit for what Obama did. The result is the economy is going really well right now. And for most of America, that's the one single issue that they care about. So there are a lot of people who actually, despite all of his lies and the ridiculous things he says, yes, there are still a lot of people who are quite happy with this president after a year in office.
Well, and the economy is the main thing that people tend to vote on.
And not being in a war, and he has a great economy, we're not in a war, and people still don't like him. He hasn't expanded his base. And there was some polling out this week that showed that the opinion of the United States government was the lowest in history. And if you ask, are we better off? Are we better off with our relationship with Iran and containing that in North Korea than we were a year ago? I think most honest brokers would say no.
Rob, a note to add on the economy is that when we look at all the metrics at PolitiFact on the economy is undoubtedly doing better. But it's really hard to make a case that any element of this tax legislation has really affected that, because most of the tax legislation hasn't really kicked in yet. So some of this seems to be cyclical, just the economy still recovering after the terrible recessions of 2008, and some of it is just like animal spirits. I mean, people like the way Trump talks about the economy. I'm sure business owners who make decisions feel more comfortable with his approach to business and regulation.
And to be fair on that, there are many Republicans that are concerned that what we've done is, in the short term, we believe that it's going to be better for the economy, taxes are down and things like that. In the long term, our debt continues to rise. Drastically rising right now.
That's
as a result of these tax cuts, somebody's going to have to pay that, or the private enterprise is going to have to grow. Mm-hmm. And if private enterprise doesn't grow, we could be 10 years from now in a very large problem if these tax cuts remain.
Okay. Well, that tension between the state legislature and local governments is back again this year. It's been simmering for some time as Tallahassee passes more and more legislation taking away power from local cities and counties.
In recent years, the legislature has thrown out local ordinances on wages, guns, drones, ride-sharing, marijuana dispensaries, and gas station signage. This year, some in Tallahassee want to go further, proposing to ban so-called sanctuary cities, limiting public subsidies to sports teams, regulating vacation rentals, and placing new barriers on local tax increases, all bills that restrict municipal power.
So, Barry, is there a good reason for Tallahassee to get involved in saying to local communities, you can't do that?
No. And I agree with my Republican friends on this. Government that is government at the closest is government that's the best. And I don't understand why my conservative Republican friends have abandoned that when people at the local level disagree with them. They don't seem to want the federal government telling them what to do because they think that they're much closer. But apparently the sweet spot is if you're in Tallahassee versus if you're in Pinellas County or St. Petersburg or Miami.
I'm just thinking if I took a Uber ride from North Pinellas down to downtown St. Petersburg, I might have to stop two or three times on the way down there because one of the small little municipalities passed an order saying we're not allowing Uber here. Only taxi cab drivers can do it. So, I mean, I hear what you have to say, Barry, but, you know, historically, it was all the legislature that controlled everything. And in 1968, we changed that back to home rule. And to the extent Tallahassee does not have the time to rule on something or make a law, that's fine. The municipalities are absolutely free to make rules with respect to that. But the craziness that we even saw at the Uber goes on to show the reason why you might need uniform state laws throughout rather than every municipality passing its own, you know, belief as to the way people ought to either get along, who can have guns at what particular time and things like that.
I agree. The state has its role and in establishing some broad-based laws for everybody to follow to make things work. But for Richard Corcoran to say that the legislature is more responsive to local citizens than local government is the most hypocritical thing I can ever imagine anybody saying. The way the legislature works, especially in the House Speaker has all the power. He decides what bills are heard. He decides who is going to be on what committees. He decides who gets parking spaces. And that means your local representatives, your local elected representatives in the House are basically sock puppets for the Speaker. And until they start showing a little bit more backbone and standing up to House leadership or Senate leadership, may the case as the case may be, then I would go with local government every single time, because at least those are people that you can pick up the phone and talk to and actually get something done. Your representatives in the House cannot do it.
Well, Uber may be a good example where maybe you can't have willy-nilly rules, but then there are other examples where if a municipality wants to enact rules about wages or working conditions or Airbnb, maybe it should be left up to the local community.
Why the state changed the Constitution in 1968. There's more people in Tampa Bay today than there were in the whole state of Florida in 1968. We were back in 1968, but today we're the third largest state with over 20 million people. So it's a lot more complex. And the legislature meets for 60 days, full time, a year. The St. Pete City Council meets every week. If I have a problem, whether I agree with them on everything or not, I can go find Darden Rice or Mayor Kreisman or Ken Welch, the county commissioner, and, you know, because they live and complain. Yeah. And I can't do that with the speaker.
The danger here is that this looks like a Republican-controlled legislature stopping cities that are governed by Democrats. And when it just seems like it's just like a partisan wielding of power, whoever's strongest and can assert their will, that makes the public very cynical. So whatever the reasons and whatever the issues are, I think that the state legislature needs to be very careful about not making this look like it's just a partisan exercise of power.
John, some people have said that it's easier for big moneyed interests to control the legislature than it is to go around to 30 or 40 or 50 cities around the state and exert influence. Is that what's going on here?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at what, you know, the utilities do. They basically get whatever they want because they are putting big fat paychecks into political action committees, into different parties, whether it's Republican or Democrat. That doesn't happen nearly as much on the local level. And as Barry said, you can get a hold of your local representatives and tell them, and they're going to feel it a little bit more. They'll know come next election.
And then you have 50 different laws, 100 different laws. You can count up the number of municipalities, and you don't have any real rule or law, and everybody's be walking around with a law book. I know that as a lawyer, every time that you have to walk from another town to another and you have different laws that control everything, it's not good for all of us. It's really bad for business. Mm-hmm. And so with respect to businesses that do across the state, having to go and ask your lawyer, what's the law in this particular town and that particular law? Is talk about overregulation. I mean, what we hate in this country, and we hear it from people all the time, is overregulation. Get it off of our backs. What you're asking for is having absolute crazy legislation.
But look at the
overregulation.
Look at what Tallahassee has done with public schools with overregulation. Tallahassee decided that they were far more better equipped to decide what goes on in public schools than actual school boards and principals and teachers, and they have. They have turned public schools into little factories, testing factories for kids that you do nothing except preach, you know, that we're going to teach to this test all day long, every day. And it's made public schools to the point where people don't even want to send their kids there anymore.
Chip, I'll give you the last word.
Well, and I'll just use the school example. You could have 25 really bad schools and people arguing about it because the people there are so bad about either they don't have the money or whatever, not taking care of their own school districts by setting standards at the state level that everybody has to do. I'm not saying that there's not a place for home rule. There absolutely is. Our Constitution says that. But to say that we have to allow every single municipality, city, and county to make up rules for everything, we're just asking for trouble, I believe.
All right.
I'm going to throw one thing in there. If we want to have parity, if we got the Democrats, we'd elect more people, we would take away power of the leadership.
All right. Florida House Speaker Richard Corcoran wants federal prosecutors to immediately investigate two Democratic mayors in Florida for supporting so-called sanctuary cities.
Corcoran sent a letter to Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen this week saying that St. Petersburg Mayor Rick Kreisman and Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum openly advocate illegal sanctuary policies. The letter came a day after Nielsen testified in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee that her agency is exploring legal avenues to prosecute elected officials that protect immigrants from deportation.
So, Chip, let me pile a lot on you. Are St. Petersburg and Tallahassee sanctuary cities? Is it wrong? Is it illegal to be a sanctuary city? And is there evidence that these cities have greater crime rates by undocumented people?
The last question you asked me is the easiest. That answer is no. At least I think from PolitiFact would probably back me up on that. I think there's no showing whatsoever that the cities that are sanctuary cities are worse off than what other cities would be. Definitely Mayor Kreisman has come out with a philosophy, at least, not to have his police force to be actively out searching to figure out whether or not somebody's an illegal citizen rather than taking care of those that are committing what we think are crimes, especially of violence and things like that. This, I believe, is an issue more toward politics that Barry loves to talk about, and Richard Corcoran supporting President Trump's executive order. This really came down not from the United States Congress, but from the president's executive order, who apparently is trying to enforce every which way he possibly can, having illegal immigrants either deported or held up in prisons here in the United States, and having all the local law enforcement do that by declaring a sanctuary city who doesn't have that philosophy, not being able to get grants, and literally asking the leaders, local leaders, to be held in criminal contempt. So far, the federal courts have not allowed that. I know they had hearings. We were talking about that earlier today. And again, President Trump still has to do things legally. And some of these executive orders seem to be a big step over what most presidents in the past have tried to do.
Angie, just fact check it for us for a little bit. Are cities like St. Petersburg and Tallahassee the scene of higher crime rates by undocumented immigrants?
We do not see that these so-called sanctuary cities have more crime. So, it's not crime is usually has so many more factors, and it's just when you match up the cities that follow these policies with crime rates, there's no connection.
John, why do you think Corcoran's going after the mayors in Tallahassee and St. Petersburg?
Because he's trying to win the Republican nomination for governor in the next few months. I think this whole issue is sort of ridiculous, and it's actually been somewhat solved this week by Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri, who has been working for over a year with ICE to come up with a policy where local law enforcement can actually hold people that ICE thinks are illegal immigrants. They can hold them for up to 48 hours and be reimbursed by ICE for it. Previously, the courts had ruled that was unconstitutional without a warrant. I think even the deal that Gualtieri has put together, I think, may still face some legal challenges, but we actually have a place to move forward instead of just the silly rhetoric of sanctuary cities.
But, and he himself called on the politicians to solve this problem, saying that this wasn't going to solve the problem.
Correct.
Barry, what would you say? What is Corcoran's motive here?
Well, I think I don't like to question people's motivations. I question their judgment. There isn't a problem with this. And if we truly wanted to end the problem, if illegal immigration to Florida is so bad that we could do e-verify and make everybody who's paying anybody any money verify that they're a legal citizen, but they don't seem to be able to get that passed.
Well, I'm surprised we don't do that already. All right. Well, a measure under consideration in Tallahassee could cost the University of South Florida, Sarasota, Manatee, and USF St. Petersburg campuses their independence, placing them both under the control of the main campus in Tampa.
Right now, each campus is separately accredited. Each campus selects its own students for admission, controls their own finances, hires their own faculty, and creates their own curriculum. Proponents say the change could prompt Tampa leadership to share more resources with USF's other campuses, benefiting students who might otherwise be shut out of certain programs. But the move has been met with skepticism by some faculty and students on the Sarasota and St. Petersburg campuses because it was suddenly introduced with no public discussion ahead of time.
John, what do you think about this move? I mean, it was really done pretty quietly. What do you make of it?
And that's one of the problems with it. Future House Speaker Chris Sprouls is sort of leading the charge here. And his point was that USF may soon be getting some preeminent money, more extra money for being a preeminent university. And he wants to make sure that the St. Petersburg campus and Sarasota campus are able to share in this money. So there is some merit to what he is saying. But the problem with that is, A, he didn't talk to anybody about this beforehand, apparently. He says he didn't talk to Judy Genschaft at USF, didn't talk to local leaders about it. And the other problem is you have to put it in a historical context that the reason that USF wanted its own accreditation, at least in St. Pete, was that they were being shortchanged by Tampa when they were under their umbrella. So he's saying that, hey, you know, put them back under Tampa's umbrella and you'll get more money. St. Pete says, no, it never worked that way in the past. We want to remain independent.
And Barry, what do you think?
Well, first of all, the first question I ask, where is the sense of urgency? Usually you have hearings and you have committee weeks and things like that. Where's the urgency where they come up with the idea, we have to get it done right now? And as far as the students at Sarasota and St. Pete being shortchanged, students decide now where they want to go to school. If you want to go to school and have the small school environment, you go to Sarasota or St. Petersburg. The big school, you go to Tampa. So the students are self-selecting there. Why not let them go where they want and have the type of environment that they want?
Chip, we just have 15 seconds. Is the legislature moving too fast? Is there another way to look at this?
I think Barry makes a good point. It's just something that just recently came up. Why do you have to move so quick to do it? I often say one of the greatest universities in the world, Oxford, runs with 20-something or 30-something completely independent colleges that take care of their own finances. So why can't we do this here with USF?
All right. Well, before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? Barry, let's start with you.
This year, every 20 years, we have the Constitutional Revision Commission, and you always can put amendments on the ballot through the legislature or through petition. The first citizen initiative was certified 2 days ago. There would be an amendment on the ballot that'll allow people to vote, or the citizens will vote whether they want to be the ultimate deciders, whether we have Las Vegas-style casinos. And we're, I think, 10,000 signatures away from a felon restoration rights initiative. So at least we're going to have them, and the CRC, the Constitutional Revision Commission, is getting ready to start putting some of the other things out, too.
All right. John, your other big story.
The University of Central Florida had a wonderful football season this year. They were undefeated. They beat Auburn in a bowl game. They deserve all kinds of honor and glory. They do not deserve to be called national champions.
Why not?
And yet, we have a proposal in the State House to put out a license plate that declares UCF national champions. And it seems like a silly thing, but my fear is, have we gotten to the point in this country where lies and alternative facts have become so normalized that a state legislature thinks nothing of creating an official state license plate that is blatant falsehood?
All right. Chip, your other big story.
I guess we got to keep everybody busy somewhere making license tags, but I'm a lawyer, and in my law firm, Sean Shaw announced that he's running for attorney general for the Democratic ticket, and that's the big news for us. Sean's father, Leander Shaw, was the first black Supreme Court justice in the state of Florida, and to me, at least, that's the biggest news story we have going, at least locally.
He's a Democrat. You're a Republican.
I'm a Republican, but I'm supporting him all the way on this election. My friends and family always come first.
Angie, you're the big story.
Governor Rick Scott wrote an op-ed this week saying that the Congress in Washington, D.C. needs to deal with the Dreamers, that is, give legal status to young people who were brought to the United States when they were children. And it's a very interesting op-ed. He's saying, like, Congress needs to get itself together and do this and border security. And it makes you wonder about him softening his position a little, and it makes me wonder about U.S. Senate candidacy later this year. Interesting.
And does that mean that he's sure there's no Republican primary? He's just looking forward to the general?
Could be. Yeah. I mean, it makes you go, Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all for a great show, and thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org.
That was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV, the PBS station in Tampa. And my guests on that program, Angie Holan, who is the Washington editor of the fact-checking organization PolitiFact. Also on there, a Republican, Chip Merlin, who's an attorney in Tampa. Barry Edwards was the Democrat on that panel. And John Romano, the columnist at the Tampa Bay Times, was another journalist on that panel. And you can see the show on the WEDU website at WEDU.org. Well, thanks to Frank Knox. He's our phone producer today. We're going to open up the phone lines and take some phone calls at 813-239-9663. Coming up at 12 noon today on Midpoint, one of the topics that Sean Canan will be tackling, we'll be taking a look at redistricting of Tampa City Council seats. And a lot is at stake as some communities stand to gain, some communities stand to benefit, and some stand to lose by the redistricting process, and Sean's going to tell you what's at stake at 12 noon today. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Just looking at the Associated Press right now, the latest on the shutdown, and I'll just read their top story on the AP wire right now. The government shutdown is set to sow more disruption and political peril today after the Senate inched closer but ultimately fell short of an agreement that would have reopened federal agencies before the beginning of the work week. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer said negotiations lasted late into the night last night with a vote to break a Democratic filibuster on a short-term funding bill scheduled for noon today. Under the proposal taking shape, Democrats would agree to a three-week spending measure until February 8th in return for a commitment from the Republican leadership in the Senate to address immigration policy and other pressing legislative matters in the coming weeks. But Democrats appeared to be holding out for a firmer commitment from McConnell. Schumer said late Sunday, "We have yet to reach an agreement on a path forward." McConnell's comments followed hours of behind-the-scenes talks between the leaders and rank-and-file lawmakers over how to end the display of legislative dysfunction, which began at midnight Friday after Democrats blocked a temporary spending measure. Democrats have sought to use the spending bill to win concessions, including protections for roughly 700,000 younger immigrants brought here illegally to the U.S. as children, the so-called Dreamers. Republicans have appeared increasingly confident that Democrats were bearing the brunt of criticism for the shutdown and that they would ultimately buckle. The White House and GOP leaders said that they would not negotiate with Democrats on immigration until the government is reopened. President Trump said today he accused Democrats of prioritizing services and security for non-citizens over U.S. citizens. "Not good," his first tweet this morning said. In a second tweet, he said Democrats have shut down our government in the interests of their far-left base. They don't want to do it, but are powerless. Trump's first tweet appeared to undercut comments by his legislative affairs director, Mark Short, who told CNN that the immigrants in question are law-abiding and productive to our society. Short says the administration wants to find a pathway for them to stay in the U.S. There were indications Sunday that Democrat resolve was beginning to waver, with growing worries that a prolonged shutdown could prove to be an electoral headache for the party, just as it has grown more confident about its prospects for the November midterm elections. Although they initially dug in on a demand for an immigration deal, Democrats had shifted to blaming the shutdown on the incompetence of Republicans and Trump, seeming sensitive to being seen by voters as willing to tie up government operations to protect immigrants. So that's the opening of the latest AP story on what's going on in Washington. Looks like there's going to be a vote at noon today, so we'll see what happens. And what do you think of the shutdown? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Is it affecting you? Do you care? And there's some other big stories in the news. Just glancing at the front page of the local paper this morning, three big stories jump out. Of course, 5,000 people marched in downtown St. Petersburg yesterday as part of the Women's March. There were millions of people who rallied over the weekend in countries around the world, including in cities around the world, rather, including many, many cities here in the U.S. on Saturday and Sunday. So if you were at one of the women's marches, tell us what your thoughts are. 813-239-9663. And this story from the Washington Post: the U.S. Army is readying plans that could increase the total force in Afghanistan by as many as 1,000 U.S. troops this spring, beyond the 14,000 already in the country, senior military officials said. That story's in the Washington Post this morning, also on the front page of the Tampa Bay Times. And this story: more inmates died in Florida prisons last year than in any other year on record, leaving the state scrambling to identify causes and find solutions. The total, 428 inmates in 2017, was released late Friday by the Department of Corrections of Florida and showed a 20% increase over the previous years. So a record number of deaths in Florida prisons this year, more troops to Afghanistan, and millions of people marching in the women's marches around the world. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, or email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Nate in Bradenton. Hi, Nate. What would you like to comment about?
Well, for one, I have Dreamers in my family. You know, I have uncles. I'm an African American man, but I have uncles who were not raised in this country, but they have wives from Mexico, they have wives from El Salvador, and it's just they made children in other countries and came here, and I have friends of mine who are literally, not literally in hiding, but they just try not to go out as much because they just don't know what's going to happen.
They're afraid of being picked up.
Yeah. And, you know, my friend, I have a friend of mine, he's been here for 37 years. He owns a business. He owns a townhouse. His kids go to private school. The guy worked himself up from nothing, and his wife is not legal. He has a visa. He has a work permit. His kids are legal, but like he said, if I get pulled over, my wife is gone. So she doesn't leave the house anymore. She doesn't go to the little league baseball or volleyball games. She doesn't go to their little dance classes or anything like that. And I just think that with this government shutdown, they're both parties. I'm blaming everybody. I'm not one of these people that's going to blame Trump or the Democrats or Republicans. I blame everybody for being highly incompetent while their houses are paid for and their kids' schooling is paid for and they're taking a gamble on our lives. And I wish the voters would stop taking sides with millionaires and billionaires and just blame them all. Because, look, one party controls everything, but the other party understands the rules of the Senate, and they're all baiting all of us while they play this bait and switch. And I think it's disgusting. I blame them all, everybody.
All right, Nate, and what would you do about it?
Well, my thing is that until you start rotating those seats in Congress, because 96% of the people say they hate Congress, they give them 11% approval rating, but 93% of the people get voted back into Congress.
Yeah, well, it's the numbers show that people in general don't like Congress, but they tend to like their local member of Congress.
And so, that is the ignorance of the American population right there in a nutshell.
Well, or it could be that you like what your local congressperson is doing, but you don't like what that guy is doing in North Carolina or South Carolina or Mississippi. I mean, that could be it.
Could be, but, you know, they did an expose in Washington Post on, like, majority of these districts that have congressman or woman that's been there for more than 20 years, their districts still look the same. So at some point, it has to play into who's reading up on these folks and not just watching Fox News or MSNBC or
so,
CNN.
Nate, who's your congressman?
Gus Bilirakis.
No, you're calling from Bradenton. Is that where you're calling from?
Well, that's just because I'm working in Bradenton today. So
all right, okay.
Yeah,
I was going to say your congressman is Vern Buchanan. Okay, it's Gus Bilirakis. So Gus has been there a long time, and his dad was there before him. Gus gets reelected without much of a fight every year.
Absolutely.
I think there's two pretty prominent Democrats who are challenging Bilirakis this year. So what do you make of that? Do you want to throw Bilirakis out?
Well, I don't want to just throw him out without going through running a ringer on him. I mean, I was a liberal my entire life, but I voted for him the last two times he ran. But my thing is, if there's new Democrats and whoever come out and they look better to me than him, then I'm gonna vote for him to be gone. If not, then I'll vote for him to continue to stay on the job. And that's the way I've always done. I've never voted for one party in my life.
Yeah, and Nate, I'm just curious. You're a liberal and you voted for Bilirakis the last two times. Why?
No. I've been a liberal pretty much my whole life. For the last two elections, I switched to independent. But the reason why I voted for him is because he's very strong on low taxes. He's very strong, on the child credit situation. He's very good at the growth of our county. I mean, in Pasco County, we saw an extreme boom in business. And I work in the field that if they're not building things, I don't make any money. And I kind of appreciate that.
All right. Nate, thanks a lot. Thanks for starting the conversation.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Good to hear from you. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're going to go to Brian in Tampa. Hi, Brian. You're on. What's on your mind?
Hi, how you doing today?
I'm great. How about you?
Good. I think one of the biggest things we need to fix this is have term limits. Two terms and gone. These people get entrenched, and they end up being millionaires when they leave because they can do so much that the American public can't. They can inside trade. They know all the angles. The term limits is really the answer.
And how would that affect, how would that stop this kind of impasse that we see between Democrats and Republicans next time?
I think they would have to do their job. And they shouldn't get paid. When the government shuts down, they don't get paid.
Right, but you're still going to have that the conflict between the Democrats and Republicans.
I don't know why it's gotten worse over the last few years, and the Democrats have taken a stand on this immigration thing. And if you're, how can you put good American citizens ahead of illegal? They came here illegally. They need to get straight. And they don't make any attempt at it. They just stay illegal. The last caller, I feel for the guy about his wife having to stay home. But if you've been here 20 years, why didn't you try to get legal?
Well, he's not here to defend himself, but all these folks are trying to get legal. I mean, the Dreamers who were brought here as children, you say that they came here illegally, but they really came, you know, along with their parents. I don't think that they were consciously violating the law. They didn't know what the law was. They were kids. So, you know, I think all the Dreamers want to become legal. There's no process for them to do so. There's no avenue for them to do so. They're blocked, really, from becoming legal. So that's what they're protesting about. That's what they're angry about. All right. Brian, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call.
Hey.
Great to hear from you. Brian, who says term limits would solve the impasse. Do you think that's right? Let's go to Betty in Sarasota. Hi, Betty. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Yes, I agree with a lot of what your previous callers had to say, and I do agree. Term limits would be great. I am originally from Canada, where we had the parliamentary system. But, you know, just like the parliamentary system they have in England, you know, there's a lot of gridlock and a lot of forces that work against the Democrats, unfortunately, even when they're in power, as we've seen in the past. I saw the movie The Post last night, by the way, in a slightly different note. And, you know, it was a packed house here in Sarasota at the Hollywood 20. And I have to say, it was a decent film, quite a good film. But, you know, it's so timely. Everybody should go see it because it really, really makes you wonder and scratch your head about what's going on today, and to see just how much corruption we're dealing with this absolutely diabolical president and his minions up there in up there in Washington. And so I recommend, if you haven't seen it, you should definitely go see The Post. It's very, very interesting.
Well, I've got a good friend, Dennis, who calls here from time to time, and he says it should be shown in every high school in the country to give people a civics lesson. You know, to your point, though, Betty, when you say term limits, I mean, isn't voting the way we have term limits? We vote people in and out, and if you want to remove somebody from office, just vote against them. If you think somebody has been, if six terms has been too much in the House of Representatives in Washington, just vote against them next time. You could do that. When there's nobody stopping you from doing that.
That's true. And I think that, you know, it has certainly, that system has proven itself to be effective in many cases. Unfortunately, a lot of these people who are entrenched also have, you know, tremendous amount of money, and they have a lot of support, and they have name recognition. So if they're being contested by someone with much less recognition, sometimes people would rather go with the known quantity, which is terrible or bad, in favor of somebody that they don't know because they have, quote-unquote, less experience or less name recognition. So we've seen some of that at play. So I understand, you know.
Isn't that an argument that if voters don't know who these people are, what their real reputations are, they only know the name? That an argument for voters to get more informed?
Exactly. You know, but what I see across the board, you know, which impacts just about everything and every topic we talk about, and I listen to your show daily, is that there just is a very faulty mechanism going on with education here in this country. You know, I had a pretty mediocre education up in Montreal, but I have to say that, you know, Canadians, you know, are just as isolated in a way as Americans are, because we're on a continent where we're not close to a lot of other countries such as Europeans or Africans are. But just the level of worldliness is you know, there's something up in Canada where I think the people are just a little bit more educated and informed. Down here, especially in the middle of the country, which is basically which, you know, what won the electoral vote, we're seeing millions upon millions of people who are either uneducated or undereducated, uninformed. Listen to Limbaugh or Alex Jones, and certainly Sean Hannity, who's become the spokesperson single-handedly, it seems, for Trump. You know, you're dealing with people who have these knee-jerk reactions. You give them a couple of words and thoughts, and suddenly they behave like they know what's going on in government, and it's very unfortunate. But yes, I think that our education system is really failing us, and if we did have people, if we had more politics and current events and teaching critical thinking in our schools, we'd see a much different electorate.
All right, Betty, thanks a lot. Thanks for your thoughts. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Just reading from the front page of USA Today, this story continues to amaze me that it's not front page everywhere, but a former porn star who allegedly had an affair with President Trump kicked off her Make America Horny Again tour Saturday on the anniversary of the president's inauguration. Stormy Daniels, whose real name is Stephanie Clifford, told In Touch magazine in 2011 that her alleged affair with Trump started in July 2006. On Saturday night and early Sunday in Greensville, South Carolina, Stormy Daniels performed at the Trophy Club. Here's the ad for the big event this past weekend in Greenville.
Stormy Daniels brings her Making America Horny Again tour to the Trophy Club for a one-night performance this Saturday. You've seen Stormy in movies like Real Sex and The 40-Year Virgin. The Making America Horny Tour hits the Trophy Club on the heels of Stormy's national-publicized alleged affair. This is the Twitter storm sensation. Search hashtag.
All right, so there's Stormy Daniels using her alleged affair, not agreeing that it happened in public, but using her alleged affair with President Trump to draw visitors to her appearance at a nightclub in South Carolina over the weekend, which led Saturday Night Live to do this bit this past Saturday night. Did you see this? And comment about this. 813-239-9663.
And now it's time to play What Even Matters Anymore with your host, Veronica Elder.
To What Even Matters Anymore, the show where I tell you something our president did or said, and you have to tell me, does it even matter anymore? First, let's meet our contestants.
Hi.
Hey.
Great. First question. The president of the United States refers to African countries as poo-poo holes and says all Haitians have AIDS. Does it even matter anymore?
That's really bad. That has to matter, yes.
Actually, it does not matter. Zero consequences, and everyone just moves on. Next, the president has an extramarital affair with a porn star right after his wife gives birth to a son. Then he pays the porn star to shut up. Does it even matter to say his evangelical base?
To evangelicals, of course it matters. It's against everything that they stand for.
You'd think so, but no. They say he's just repented and they forgive him, and Mike Pence is like, this my dude. Next, the president fires Robert Mueller, the very man investigating him for treason. Does it even matter?
Well, he hasn't done that yet.
Yeah, but you know he's gonna, so when he does, will it even matter?
I'm gonna say yes, that would matter. That's a clear line that he'd be crossing.
So close. You were right that it would cross a line, but you were wrong to think that it would matter in the least. Republicans would just shrug and mumble something about Hillary's emails.
Yeah, but they have a conscience.
Judges, do they have a conscience? Sorry, we checked and they don't.
All right, well, that
I'm
was...
I'm sorry, is this still part of the game?
It doesn't even matter anymore.
Well, that was SNL from this past Saturday night. Are they on target? Have things gotten so wacky and out of joint that nothing matters anymore? The president can do anything he wants and it doesn't matter anymore. 813-239-9663. James writes this. My daughter-in-law was a dreamer. She just got legal last Friday after 15 years of trying and thousands of dollars having been spent. I've been so afraid for her since the dotted got appointed. So that's a James email. Mark writes this about term limits. He says term limits for politicians are not needed. Limits on lobbyists are needed, writes Mark. Let's go back to the phones, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Tina in Tampa. Hi, Tina. What's on your mind?
Hi. Hey, I just want to say two things real quick. I agree with this caller. I was just going to say that, but I would say limits on donations. It's not so much term limits, but let's take limits on how much money they can accept and from who they can accept it from, because I think the problem is when they get entrenched, it's because special, you know, big moneyed interest, big, I'm not talking about, you know, people sending in $20 and $30. It's a big, well-heeled lobbyist that get them and, you know, own them. And then I want to say this, if I were Melania Trump, I would get every single thing that Stormy Daniels publishes, writes, says, does anywhere, I would unload to Donald and take him for everything he's worth. Have a great week.
All right, Tina, thanks. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to David, who's in Tampa. Hi, David, you're on. What would you like to talk about?
Oh, hey, Rob. I was just cracking up with that Making America Horny Again thing. That was hilarious. And I hadn't heard those ads. So I just, how does that kind of stuff not affect Trump? You know, it just amazes me that he's the Stephon Don.
Well, it would be interesting to hear from some evangelical callers today, people who might have voted for President Trump because of their religious beliefs, to see what they think about the latest revelations about President Trump. So let me give out the number, 813-239-9663. But David, back to you.
Well, you know, I just think about like how Gary Hart got brought down by extramarital affair, you know, scandal with Donna Rice. And, you know, I don't understand why certain politicians seem to be like Trump. It doesn't seem to affect them. I don't really get that.
Yeah, I think that SNL bit was really spot on. Is that yesterday in the New York Times there was the third installment of the ways that President Trump has changed the acceptable behavior by a president, and they had a long list of about 40 or 50 things that the president has done that seem to have raised no concern, including the Stormy Daniels revelations. And the New York Times point being that this would have been out of bounds for any previous administration, Republican or Democrat, and now the president has changed the rules of the presidency, so all this is presumed to be okay. Everything from not releasing his tax returns to presumably paying off a porn star for an affair. This is all stuff that would have singularly brought down any previous politician. This president seems to think that it is his right to do these things. And the list in the New York Times, I don't have it in front of me. I should read three or four from them. But it's an amazing list. And it's the third list so far this year that they've compiled. It's worth looking at.
I'll definitely check it out. Yeah it is amazing. Thank you.
All right, David, thank you. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Daryl, who's in Tampa. Hi, Daryl, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, how you doing? Just thinking about, making America horny again. Melania, now, since we seem to be in the Me Too movement with women, you would think they would be up in arms about this and thinking about the health of Melania, just to drift on the serious side of it. I would want, if I were her, I would want to check myself out for venereal diseases, because I wonder if Donald Trump is healthy, because reportedly with her, the latest one, he wanted to have unprotected sex. And if I understand correctly, not that I have experience with it, but what I do understand, one of the things that syphilis, when left unchecked, will mess with somebody's brain. And I'm not being funny about that at all, but I'm thinking about Melania. I would want, if I had a partner that's not faithful, and stuff started coming out about them, I would want to have myself checked out.
All right. Daryl, thanks a lot. Yeah, we don't have any evidence of that. And You know, I think that there are symptoms associated with that. If you'd have your syphilis untreated, that would have probably seen in the president.
Right, and so. I'm just throwing that out there. But I mean, in all seriousness, with Melania, I would want to get myself, you know, a blood test or whatever to see if I'm all right. Because if all of this stuff is coming out about this person about being unfaithful and just for general health, and I know WMNF has touched on this before, about people who are not practicing safe sex. Remember, you sleeping with that person, you're actually sleeping with the person that they slept with and they slept with and they slept with. It's just not safe.
Yeah, it's really important to practice safe sex.
Checked out.
Yeah, Daryl, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. All right. Patrick writes this, no, Rob, voting them out is not the answer. I believe in term limits myself, writes Patrick. So there's somebody in favor of term limits. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Be sure to stay tuned for Midpoint with Sean Canan coming up next right here on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.